Let's go ahead and open our Bibles to Deuteronomy chapter number 11, verse 26, where we pick up again with Moses making his final address to the Israelites as they are on the plains of Moab in the 40th year and the 11th month of that year of the Exodus. Moses is trying to very much impress upon the oldest of the Israelites, that is, those that are now in their 50s who were teenagers back at the time of the Exodus, that they must not be like their parents and their grandparents who rebelled against God. They must instead keep God's commandments, love Him with all their heart, soul, and strength, and they must teach that to the generations following them, so that all the Israelites can have a good long time in the promised land. In Deuteronomy chapter 11, starting at verse 26, Moses brings up this idea that it is a choice between having the blessing of God or having the curse of God. And there will even be a ceremony that God will expect these Israelites to engage in once they arrive in the promised land to highlight that actual choice. So Deuteronomy 11, 26, Moses speaking. See, I am setting before you today a blessing and a curse. The blessing, if you obey the commandments of He who is your God, which I command you today. And the curse, if you do not obey the commandments of He who is your God, but turn aside from the way that I am commanding you today to go after other gods that you have not known. So it's between life and death, blessing and curse, obedience and disobedience, loyalty to God alone, or the loyalty to other gods and goddesses. Those are the choices that this generation and every succeeding generation has. It's actually kind of the choice that we as believers have to this day as we go through our life. And that is, will we or will we not remain faithful to Jesus and Jesus alone? And based on that, is going to be the response of we will either be blessed or cursed in the presence of God. And we definitely do not want to be sinners as we stand before the presence of the eternal God on the day of our death or on Judgment Day. All right, so verse 29, now Moses introduces the idea that will be carried out by Joshua of a blessing and cursing ceremony whenever they do get into the land of promise. Verse 29, when He who is your God brings you into the land that you are entering to take possession of it, you shall set the blessing on Mount Gerizim and the curse on Mount Ebal. Are they not beyond the Jordan, west of the road, toward the going down of the sun, in the land of the Canaanites, who live in the Arabah, opposite Gilgal, beside the oak of Moreh? So all of this is just kind of a designation for there are two mountains that you are aware of in the promised land that are prominent. These mountains actually exist south and north of the city of Shechem, which is where Jacob set up his first encampment and worship site once he came back from Aram up in the north into Canaan proper, into the promised land. And so this is a place of significance to the descendants of Abraham. And these two mountains are a very distinct arrangement in the Promised Land, and they're very near the center, the geographic center of the Promised Land. They are the shoulders on either side of Shechem, and the perfect place to have a ceremony where people standing on the slopes of one mountain are going to recite the promises of blessing that God offers to the Israelis, while people on the other slope will recite the promises of curse for those who abandon the covenant of God. So remember Gerizim and Ebal. All right, verse number, where'd we stop off here? Verse 31. For you are to cross over the Jordan to go in to take possession of the land that he who is your God is giving you. And when you possess it and live in it, you shall be careful to do all the statutes and the rules that I'm setting before you today. So just a quick mention of the blessing and curse ceremony on Mount Gerizim and Mount Ebal. It will be developed more later in the book of Deuteronomy, because Moses wants to bring this theme to the forefront as he closes the book. But Joshua is the one that will actually carry out the ceremony. And just kind of getting ahead of the story a little bit here, he will make sure that the commandments of God are written down on a series of stones that are whitewashed and then written upon, so that they will be on public display for all the Israelis to come and read them for themselves on a regular basis. So Shechem is going to become a significant site of the covenant. Unfortunately, it will degrade into a twisted belief system very rapidly during the time of the judges. And I'll reference back to the Gerizim and Ebal blessing and cursing ceremonies whenever we get to those examples of how Israel pretty much chose the curse more than they chose the blessing. Chapter number 12. These are the statutes and the rules that you shall be careful to do in the land that he who is the God of your fathers has given you to possess all the days that you live on the earth. You shall surely destroy all the places where the nations whom you shall dispossess serve their gods, on the high mountains and on the hills and under every green tree. You shall tear down their altars and dash in pieces their pillars and burn their Asherim with fire. You shall chop down the carved images of their gods and destroy their name out of that place. You shall not worship he who is your God in that way. So the Israelis are told repeatedly, as they go into the Promised Land, and as God is pushing out the pagan peoples because of their sinful belief structure, and the Israelis are enforcing that, executing any of them that try to stay behind, they are to identify and destroy any place of pagan worship. They're not supposed to take them over as worship for the true and living God. They are to raze them to the ground. So if they've got like a pillar, a stone pillar that's set up in the name of Baal, it is to be knocked over and dismantled. If it's a tree or a totem pole that is dedicated to the queen of heaven, the goddess of fertility, Asherah, then they are to destroy it, chop it to pieces, burn it up, whatever it takes to get rid of it. Altars that are being used to worship these gods and goddesses are to be completely demolished, dismantled, scattered, and not used as a worship site for the true and living God. They are to basically annihilate any type of worship other than that which is going to take place at the tabernacle. Verse number 5. You shall seek the place that he who is your God will choose out of all your tribes to put his name and make his habitation there. There you shall go, and there you shall bring your burnt offerings and your sacrifices, your tithes and the contribution that you present, your vow offerings, your freewill offerings, and the firstborn of your herd and of your flock. And there you shall eat before he who is your God, and you shall rejoice, you and your households, in all that you undertake, in which he who is your God has blessed you. So, from the very beginning, the intention was there would be one main worship site for sacrifices. It would first start out as to wherever the tabernacle was camped, wherever the tabernacle was pitched. That's the main worship site. All sacrifices are supposed to take place there. Eventually, God would designate a place for a temple to be built, a permanent place of worship. And then all the sacrifices are supposed to happen there. Now, they will have other worship sites scattered around the nation. Because the main times that the people as a whole will travel to the one worship site will be at Passover in the spring for the anniversary of the Exodus. And at Pentecost, at the tail end of spring, right before it becomes summer, for the feast of Passover, which kicks off the wheat harvest. And then tabernacles in the fall, around the time of the fall equinox, when all of the grain and all of the summer fruits, all of the sheep shearings, every bit of harvest has already been brought in, and the Israelis would be presenting their tithe to God to be used by the Levites and the priests. So those are the three times of the year that the main worship site is going to be come to by all of the Israelis as a whole. The rest of the time, we can be pretty certain that they would have had places of prayer and worship that the Levites and the priests living in the various cities around the Levitical cities would kind of staff and be the place that the people would come on the Sabbath day in order to offer their thanksgiving to God and hear from God's prophets and God's word. But they would not, in those places, supposed to be offering sacrifices. Now, we will see in our future study of Scripture that the Israelis will ignore that direction, and they will, in fact, set up places of sacrifice other than the tabernacle, other than the temple. And God will utilize some of those places to try to teach the people things through prophets, but that was not the original intention. And so what we're seeing here is God's ideal design for how sacrifices were only supposed to be taking place at one site in the entire country. Verse number 8. You shall not do according to all that we are doing here today, everyone doing whatever is right in his own eyes. Now, that's an interesting line because Moses is warning against it. Don't just do what you feel like. Book of Judges will use this phrase to describe how things were out of control. It'll say there was no king in the land those days, and everyone did as they saw fit in their own eyes. So they were making up their own rules for how to worship and serve God, and that was not a good thing. So let me read verse 8 again. You shall not do according to all that we're doing here today, everyone doing whatever is right in his own eyes, for you have not as yet come to the rest and to the inheritance of he who is your God is given you. when you go over the Jordan and live in the land that he who is your God is giving you to inherit, and when he gives you rest from all your enemies around so that you live in safety, then to the place that he who is your God will choose to make his name dwell there, there you shall bring all that I command you, your burnt offerings, your sacrifices, your tithes, and the contributions that you present, and all your finest vow offerings that you vow to he who is. So once you get into the promised land, it's supposed to be one place that you take the sacrifices, and one place that you guys gather for this group worship. Verse 12, and you shall rejoice before he who is your God, you and your sons and your daughters, your male servants and your female servants, and the Levite that is within your towns, since he has no portion or inheritance with you. So there's always this reminder, hey, you guys should have Levites living in your communities, nearby you, because they don't have their own region for their tribe. Instead, they're supposed to be serving God by serving you, by helping you have connection with God. And don't forget about taking care of them. Verse 13, take care that you do not offer your burnt offerings at any place that you see, but at the place that he who is will choose in one of your tribes. There you shall offer your burnt offerings, and there you shall do all that I am commanding you. So in this standard given by Moses at the inspiration of God, the Israelis were supposed to have a one site for sacrifice. One site. First, wherever the tabernacle is located, and then later, wherever the temple is located, which of course we know is the Temple Mount in Jerusalem. Now, the Israelis, though, would probably like to eat meat more often than 3 times a year when they go to the place of sacrifice for Passover, Pentecost, and tabernacles. So Moses tells them that the eating of meat is not just simply limited to the place where you offer sacrifices. Verse 15. However, you may slaughter and eat meat within any of your towns as much as you desire, according to the blessing of he who is your God that he has given you. The unclean and the clean may eat of it as of the gazelle and as of the deer. So you can go ahead and have wild game. Anytime you feel like it, you can have wild game meat. You don't have to wait until it's worship time at the tabernacle for you. Here's the requirement, though, verse 15 or verse 16. Only you shall not eat the blood. You shall pour it out on the earth like water. So the rule is no arterial blood. So if you shoot like a gazelle with your bow and arrow, or you take it out with a slingshot, immediately you go up and you cut its throat and you drain the arterial blood out of it. That's the proper procedure for these Israelis. Verse 17. You may not eat within your towns the tithe of your grain or of your wine or of your oil or the firstborn of your herd or of your flock or any of your vow offerings that you vow or your freewill offerings or the contribution that you present. But you shall eat them before he who is your God in the place that he who is your God will choose, you and your son and your daughter, your male servant and your female servant, and the Levite who is within your towns. And you shall rejoice before he who is your God in all that you undertake. Take care that you do not neglect the Levite as long as you live in the land. Now, this might confuse some of you because your thinking is, well, wait a second, they're not supposed to be eating the tithe at all because that belongs to the Levites and the priests, right? Well, later we will find out, pardon me, and apparently it's already been talked about by Moses to the Israelis, that God has said when it comes to the time of Feast of Tabernacles in particular, because that's the time of the tithe, you bring your tithe to the place of worship, and you may spend the week of the Feast of Tabernacles eating from that tithe. So you can have some of the grain cooked up, you can have some of the meat cooked up, and you have a great big party all that week using some of the tithe that you're bringing with you. Make sure that you invite the Levites to come and celebrate with you during this time. And of course, you're not going to be able to eat up your entire tithe during 1 week of celebration, because you're going to be so blessed that you've got tons more than that. So whatever is left over once the week of celebration is finished, that is then handed over to the Levites and the priests as the fullness of the tithe. So the tithe can only be eaten as part of the Feast of Tabernacles celebration, and it's certainly not going to be the fullness of your tithe. And so that's all that's being brought out here, is as the year progresses and you set aside your tithe for the Feast of Tabernacles time period, when you're going to give it to the priests and Levites, don't be eating out of that storage. Those animals, the firstborn animals in particular, the tithe animals, and all the tithe products, those are set aside for your trip later. You can't eat from them during the rest of the year at your house. You have to be at the worship site in order to do that. Verse number 20. When he who is your God enlarges your territory, as he's promised you, and you say, I will eat meat because you crave meat, well, you may eat meat whenever you desire. If the place that he who is your God will choose to put his name there is too far from you, then you may kill any of your herd or your flock, which he who is has given you, as I commanded you, and you may eat within your towns whatever you desire. Just as the gazelle or the deer is eaten, so you may eat of it. The unclean and the clean alike may eat of it. That's talking about the people who are ceremonially clean or those who are ceremonially unclean. Verse 23, only be sure that you do not eat the blood, for the blood is the life, and you shall not eat the life with the flesh. You shall not eat it, you shall pour it out on the earth like water. You shall not eat it, that all may go well with you and with your children after you, when you do what is right in the sight of he who is. So the idea here is, you might get hungry for some mutton, for some sheep or goat, or you might get hungry for a nice beef steak between the time that you were at the tabernacle last and the next time you go to the tabernacle. Well, that's not a problem. If you're close enough, sure, just go and offer a sacrificial animal as a Thanksgiving offering, and then part of it will go to the priests, and then you get to eat the other part of it. But if you're too far away to make that little quick trip over to the tabernacle, don't worry about it. Just butcher it wherever you live, give thanks to God, and eat it, just like you would wild game. Just make sure you bleed it out properly. Don't eat any of the arterial blood. So that was the rule given to the Israelites when it came to eating of meat. They could eat it any time of year, just as long as they didn't eat of the blood. And by the way, Acts chapter 15 makes it pretty plain that we as Christians also need to respect the life that's in the blood, and we should not be eating improperly bled animals. Now, I don't know that you'd have to say it has to be kosher by Jewish standards where a rabbi has watched the killing process, but we certainly ought to make sure that our animals have been properly bled and we are not showing disrespect for the life that God has given through the blood. All right, verse number 26. But the holy things that are due from you and your vow offerings, you shall take, and you shall go to the place that he who is will choose, and offer your burnt offerings, the flesh and the blood, on the altar of he who is your God. The blood of your sacrifices shall be poured out on the altar of he who is your God, but the flesh you may eat. So again, if you're close enough, do it at the tabernacle. Be careful to obey all these words that I command you, that it may go well with you and with your children after you forever, when you do what is good and right in the sight of he who is your God. So the book of Deuteronomy is just recapping an awful lot of the information that Moses has already given to the Israelites. Because remember, he's jamming all this information into their hearts and minds one more time before he lays down and dies within a matter of weeks. Verse 29, and we're almost out of time, so let's see how much farther we get. When he who is your God cuts off before you the nations whom you go in to dispossess, and you dispossess them and dwell in their land. So you go in, you evict them, you execute any of them that try to stay behind, and you take possession of their properties, because that's God's penalty against the sinful Canaanites, who have had 500 years now since the time of Abraham to get their act together and quit sinning, but they haven't. They've gotten worse, so they are under the judgment of God. So when you go in and take possession of the property, verse 30, take care that you are not enslaved to follow them after they've been destroyed before you, and that you do not inquire after their God or about their God, saying, how did these nations serve their gods, that I also may do the same? You shall not worship he who is your God in that way, for every abominable thing that he who is hates, they've done for their gods, for they even burn their sons and their daughters in the fire to their gods. So not only should the Israelites not worship the pagan deities of the Canaanites, they should not adopt the procedures of worship that the Canaanites are using, which includes getting drunk, overeating, having sex, and even killing little babies that have been part of an earlier worship process.